first part of the podcast, you're going to read that to us, right?
Yeah. Everyone grab their blankets.
This is the Meteor Club Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about all things Meteor.
Hello, Meteor fans, and welcome to Meteor JS Club Podcast. Each week, we invite a few special guests and dive deep into Meteor-related topics, which are inspired directly by the most amazing Meteor Slack group in existence, the Meteor JS Club Slack group. And if you think I really did say Meteor five times in that last sentence, you are correct. Our topics today will be building native and hybrid mobile applications with Meteor, company culture when Meteor is involved, and why Josh seems like he's aging so rapidly. Today, on our panel, we have Abhi. Abhi is a full-stack Meteor developer at WorkPop, where he focuses on modular features, feature development, and building the engineering culture out there. Hello, Abhi.
What up?
What up, bro? And Alex. And Alex is awesome. He's worked at LinkedIn, where he tinkered with flagship iPhone app, led the mobile web development team, and built SlideShare mobile app in Swift. Today, he is an everything developer at WorkPop back home in Los Angeles. And it's nice and sunny out there, eh?
That's right.
Yeah.
Josh, I'm super jealous.
Is that the A? Is that a reference to your new job?
Ah. And I'm your co-host, Ben Strahan, coming from Chicago and a newly minted developer at OK Grow.
Congrats.
And lastly, but not certainly least, is Josh Owens, creator of everything Meteor JS Club and the top Meteor evangelist on the web. How's it going, Josh?
All right.
So today's a special day for you, bro.
Indeed, I guess.
Yeah. What's going down?
So when you like get older and you have a birthday, it's just not as special anymore. I don't know, like you almost dread them. So turning 35 today. Yeah,
pretty young, man.
halfway to the 40 hump there.
Yeah, you might as well 40.
Might as well. Yeah. We're at the roundup point, right? So
right on. So did you get something special in the mail today?
I did. So you told me not to open it. I haven't looked at it yet, but the wife did open it because she was curious. She didn't tell me what it was, though.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have the message right there?
Yeah, I don't know. I gotta open it. What's the receipt? Here's a message. It looks like a book. Happy birthday, bro. Hope this helps you on those scary nights. Wendy can read it to you as you fall asleep from your cool co-host, Ben.
Right on. So what's this cool book that you got, man?
I'm going to read it. Good Night Brew. A parody for beer people. Nice.
I like that.
Right on.
That's awesome, man.
First part of the podcast, you're going to read that to us, right?
Yeah. Everyone grab their blankets.
Very cool. Well, happy birthday, Josh.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, man.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. So I think the big topic here and why we had the WorkPop guys on is because we want to talk about all things iOS, maybe. In relation to Meteor, you know, like I'm currently building a Cordova app. Ben's soon-to-be former employer had him build a Cordova app, and he's released it on an enterprise store, which I think is interesting. And the WorkPop guys, you guys have an iOS app as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We've got actually fully native iOS app.
Oh, really? Okay. So. What, I mean, I guess let's start with what is WorkPop, right?
Yeah.
Sure. So WorkPop, we are trying to change the way that people hire and people apply for jobs in the hourly workforce. We're trying to really build a place to empower candidates to, you know, learn more about how to get jobs and also really help employers to manage that whole hiring process. So not just the posts, but really beyond that.
Yep. Nice. And so this started as a Meteor app for you guys?
Yeah, so so back in our inception phase, we were actually debating amongst a lot of frameworks. And our CTO, Ben, who was on a Q&A for Meteor Club before, had experience, probably a year experience with Meteor. And, you know, he had to, you know, suck it up and go to our CEOs and say, hey, I think we're going to build this in Meteor. Obviously, they had a heart attack because nothing's been really of scale in Meteor yet. And we actually took this big technical bet on Meteor. And it's actually one of our, it's actually really ingrained into our culture now that we want to make Meteor work. And Meteor has been working for us. So a lot of us are investing the time to actually care about Meteor, the community, all that stuff. So we've been Meteor since the beginning. And hopefully that will stay true as we're, you know, scaling and, you know, all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
How long ago?
OG.
That Ben had with the CEO.
That must have been a year ago. We are officially a year old as of like 2 weeks ago, and nice. We've been live for around like 7 months. So we've been, and as you can see with that track record, we've been moving fast. We raised money fast, we built fast, and we're building even faster. So that's just a testament to Meteor in general. We can move at light speed, and that's the word I always use, light speed, because that's literally how fast things go. I think it's April now. Is it April?
Yeah.
That's how fast we're moving. I didn't even know.
Very cool.
Nice. So, I mean, I guess the interesting part is that when you guys made the bet on Meteor, did you guys always have plans to build an iOS app from the beginning?
So I can touch on that, and then Alex will take over. So one of my mentors in life, his name's Seth Sandler. He is a iOS developer here. He is the lead here. And, like when we were going to create this company, we knew that we wanted him to build our iOS app. He didn't have any experience with Meteor, didn't know what he was getting himself into. And for the first 8 months, he was a single developer building this huge app with a Objective DDP library that was really incomplete to our standard of, you know, making things work. So we knew that we wanted to be native because we had a meeting with Seth, and Seth was like a huge proponent of native apps. And, you know, a bunch of the two of the co-founders here knew him from before. So it all made sense that we were going to go the native route. That being said, Seth's first day was pretty difficult because he really realized, like, how am I going to do this? And really had to understand, like, what it takes to build the app. And then he settled on Objective DDP, and then Alex can talk about how that progressed.
So I joined the team about 4 months ago and sort of joined up with Seth, having done iOS, both hybrid applications and native before. And I sort of am in the same boat as Seth. I at LinkedIn, when I first joined, the LinkedIn mobile app was actually built as a hybrid application. So I did a lot of work there, taking the mobile site and embedding them inside web views and making that work. And, you know, as LinkedIn, you know, decided to go native, you know, I think I know now that we've made the right choice, here at WorkPop to go native as well. User experience and developer experience both are just greatly improved, in my opinion.
That's interesting. So I'm curious, you know, like you said you've done hybrid, you've done native. What's it like doing a native application with Meteor, right? Because I'm assuming maybe with a LinkedIn app, you are hitting APIs and doing maybe more of a REST type situation than a DDP situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at LinkedIn and any other apps that I've built and worked on, you're always doing a lot of the same thing, right? You are fetching data from a web service. You are going to be creating some models, maybe persisting and caching some of it. You're going to be using that to show, you know, the user some UI based on that data, right? Where it gets complicated is where the user starts modifying that data. You start having to keep state on the client, sort of reconciling, you know, the differences between the client and the server restfully via, you know, post requests, that type of thing. And so you have to, it's a very different mindset. Every app is built that way. pretty much out there, right? Hitting RESTful web service. So coming into coming onto the WorkPop team, and one thing that really just excited me was to really just kind of turn that around on its head and really build something that is very, very different, right? It's a different attitude. A lot of what's great about Meteor in general is that it kind of abstracts away into the platform the, you know, the need for you to manage a lot of that state, right? DDP as a protocol, and Meteor handles reconciling differences, you know, keeping a local cache on the client, that type of thing. And we've taken inspiration from the client side parts of Meteor itself on web and brought that over to iOS. But yeah, it's a very different experience for sure. And it took some getting used to, but we've been through over the last few months, a lot of refactors, and it's going really great. And it's really good. So
is it better or worse?
So a lot of things are better and some things are worse. I can start with the bad, I guess. The bad is that there are a lot of tools around HTTP debugging and sniffing, right? So really knowing to be able to go really deeply into see what's going on. I mean, there's just not quite as many tools for looking at what DDP is going in and out. So we end up having a lot of logging. So just a lot of logging, a lot of looking at your DDP logs with JSON objects moving back and forth, what was sent, what was received. That type of thing, the tools, I think, were a little bit more difficult. So yeah, there's not really that. I mean, most developers on iOS are going to be really used to making a RESTful call, getting that data and displaying it, right? Not a lot of developers, myself included before I was here, are used to something like querying a data set and being informed on when that data set changes over time and sort of reacting to those changes and using them to update the UI. But I also think that, you know, although the hump is a little bit big, I have to get over it. It's something that really in the end is a benefit, because you don't, a lot of that logic of like, oh, when do I fetch? If this fails, what do I do? This thing, it kind of gets rid of that whole decision-making and statefulness of your code, right? I'm subscribing. The data set on the client is always correct. I'm listening to changes to it, and anything else is really handled by the protocol.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, that's similar to what I've heard from other people. When I was at Differential, you know, they had, we built a Lister app as part of our, it's called Lister.io. We built that and we put a REST API out with it. And the iOS guy offered, like, that we knew, just came in and said, hey, like, I want to build an app that works with your, API, like let's build something together. And so like he just did that for, you know, kicks. And then later on, Differential hired him to work on something else, and they used Objective DDP, and he said that he liked the experience a lot better. And so that's why I asked that question.
Yeah, I mean, to be a little bit more concrete about an example, I guess, I mean, I think any web developer, application developer at all on any platform has written this same code, right? Let's imagine that you have some sort of, I don't know, some post or something like that, and you want to like it or something. You're modifying some state on the client, right? And I hit the like button, right? I have my local copy in memory of that, you know, post, and I hit like, and now it's liked. In my local copy, that local copy is not really connected in any sort of way, you know, necessarily to my RESTful call that I need to make to post that like to the server, right? So I'm going to make a post request, I'm going to like it, and that post request may return, you know, 200, okay, or 201 or whatever, you created that like, everything's good, or you might get 404, or you might get whatever, you might get any plethora of errors, right? So in that case, what do you do? Well, it depends on the error. Let's say I got a 404. That means I was trying to, my state was a little bit off of, you know, the server, and I'm reversed. So maybe I shouldn't change my local copy, or maybe I should, or maybe I should just, the server always wins. I'll just rewrite my local thing. Like, you just don't actually have to write that at all when you're using DDP, because that's part of the protocol, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of, explicitly, I can listen for, you know, success or error from methods. Method calls in Meteor, But we use that only to notify the user really if there's an error. The statefulness between my local data set and the server's data set is already taken care of. I fire and I essentially forget. And then my local's data store is updated already through the protocol, and I'm just going to react to that change, right? So that eliminates a whole class of bugs. Yeah. And it eliminates an entire level of complexity from, you know, your code. The more states you have, the more bugs you're going to have, really.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch this around now and ask Ben. So you've built the Cordova iOS app, and you've submitted to the Enterprise Store. Yeah. Have you written any iOS apps before? And did you just, huh?
Nope.
No. So you came to this completely green, no experience, just use Cordova and Meteor to do it, right?
Yep. I pushed it just a few weeks after 9.4 came out, version 9.4, which that had the Cordova in it, right?
Yeah, and 0.9.2, I think, had Cordova.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was just before 1. Mm-hmm. So
it should have been like 0.10, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, okay. So, and, I mean, what has that experience been like for you?
Well, when Meteoric came out, the experience was amazing after that. So just Meteoric and the Cordova build, there's just a few weird things with it. And after that, it was just smooth sailing. Came together a lot faster than I thought. It even shocked me. And the Enterprise app, that was pretty interesting. Anyone who ever applied for an Enterprise license with Apple, I don't know if I should even talk about it because it's kind of like awkward. I
have way too much experience logging in and out of the developer portal. Way too much. List that up.
So you get like superpowers. I won't talk about the application process. Maybe offline it will, because it's kind of awkward. But you get this license and you pretty much have freedom to do whatever you want that you would normally do with a jailbroken app or a jailbroken phone. And you could just have this, make up your own store, have it look any way you want. And people click download this app and they're asked to trust you as a developer, like a little notification pops up. They hit okay. And boom, it's like installed. No questions asked. And, what the app that I developed was for, guys who have a real struggle with technology, and it was awesome. Meteor and the hot code push, that was a huge thing going forward. So I didn't even look for native because I wanted the hot code push. I didn't want them to have to do updates by themselves or even be notified for it. And man, that has just been an awesome experience.
Do you think like if you would have gone, like decided, hey, let's go Objective DDP and native, I mean, do you feel like that would have slowed you down because you would have had to learn Swift or Objective-C?
I mean, I didn't do it, so I'll be speculating. But yeah, it's...
We could speculate.
Yeah, total speculation.
Just a guess. I mean, yeah, I would say just like the opposite as well, right? If I were to go and build, you know, an app on Cordova, I in my perspective, I think that would slow me down, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting, right? Because I mean, if you look at it from this perspective of going from Swift to JavaScript, I actually don't think it would be that hard for a developer to do.
I have lots of JavaScript experience. It's just, I don't know, I have not done a Meteor Cordova app. I have done, you know, through a proprietary like Objective-C JavaScript bridge, you know, and hybrid application that way, which was very slow going and tough experience. So I guess I can't speak to Cordova with Meteor, which is probably a lot less, has a lot less friction than what I am used to. But jumping right in to building a native application and building out the UI that I want, and I want it to feel native and be 100% native and have, you know, iOS core animations, all of that. Mm-hmm. That's what you're kind of losing when you go with a web view.
Absolutely.
Right.
I agree with that.
What about getting your product to market? Like, what are the speeds there in the difference, right? Mm-hmm. When we want to release, we have to submit a new build, yep. right? And Ben, could you touch on new versions of your app?
Like, have you released new versions?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so we release new versions probably weekly, sometimes bi-weekly, and sometimes multiple times a week. Just depends on the push that we're doing at the time. But I mean, Hot Cold Push is amazing. It works great for me. In the Meteor sense right now, what happens is they cache your whole app on the device. So when you fire up the app, it fires it up. You have the screen pop up right away. And then it might be, depending on your connection, they then bring everything, the whole app in again. And then, so if you have a Hot Cold Push, your app might lock up for a second while it's reloading the whole thing. So that's kind of like a negative thing. I could see that user experience and being like a detriment. I didn't look too much into it though. So I don't know if there's even a workaround for it. I could imagine hacking the loading screen so that it stays active until that's done or something like that. But that was the only negative with the Hot Cold Push, was that startup and a little bit of a gap or a white screen. But
you're migrating live, right? Pretty much. So like, if anything has to do with the user, they might have a bad experience depending on, you know, if they're online or whatever. So for us, whatever. So for us, I think a little challenges with the iOS is before they release their build, like our production server code needs to be up to date with their build. And that's a tough thing if you're like still working it out, right? Yeah. You have to get this deadline to push your app. But the backend developers, me and Ben, we're like still figuring this crap out. Like, what's going to happen? And we really have to be on a schedule to make sure, like, okay, it hits our development server this day. It's ready to go by this other day. And we put a code freeze, and like, that's going to go. And then you have to support older versions. Like, is the code we just changed going to support older versions? What about the subscription? Like, all these things are like another, you know, they're a downside, right? But it's just red tape, right? It's not a big deal. It's just things you have to deal with.
Yeah. No, you know, this brings back like all the nightmares. So I managed, I was at GoDaddy and we used Titanium, and we were managing an iOS app, and like the hardest thing to deal with was exactly what you're talking about, right? Like writing, like supporting multiple versions of the application and not knowing whether people had upgraded or not. And I remember specifically, like, the very first thing we did was go in and write like an alert notice and a way for us to just shut off clients that wouldn't work anymore. And they just get a screen that says, you know, you need to go update your phone. Come on, get with it, people.
Yeah, that's that's a traditional problem, right? Whereas Meteor is taking a very, forward thinking approach, or that you no longer have to deal with those things. That's definitely something that you miss out on when building a native application. All of a sudden your Meteor subscriptions and your methods are essentially traditional APIs that are locked in to the native clients, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to having the JavaScript clients that are being served up real time that are, you know, not going to have any old code, right? So right. You essentially get locked, you know, but yeah, it's a trade-off, I think. It's a trade-off.
It definitely is. I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword too, right? Because if you do something in your application that breaks the app on the phone or in Cordova, and you deploy that and the phone grabs it, like, there's nothing you can do other than release an app store update to like unjack that phone, right?
Yep.
And that's always a concern as well. Have you dealt with that at all, or have you not made any silly mistakes yet, Ben?
I did have to do that at first. That was like a while ago, so I can't even really remember what happened, but yeah, version one of that app, we had to end up deleting it because I wasn't through the app store. I couldn't push an update to the app store's enterprise, and you have your own store, so I didn't have that feature in my story that I had. So we had to actually delete it off of the devices and then reinstall it. And so that was like a little snafu, but that wasn't even before it was really deployed, but mm-hmm. I did have that issue. And I was crossing my fingers. I was like, man, if this happens out in the real world, I could see it causing some big problems. And that goes back to the user experience. Like from the enterprise standpoint, you kind of don't worry so much about the polish sometimes. You're working with a group of guys and you have other means of communication with them, like internal emails and things like that. But when you're out in the retail world, like WorkPop, I mean, you going native offers you the features that you really need to be consistent with your offering.
Yeah, I think so. It allows us to create an experience that is, I don't want to say on par with our competitors, because I think our app is many leagues beyond our competitors as far as usability and just
absolutely
great looks and just feel. But it to be on par with other great apps in the Apple Store, in the App Store. And that's really nice. But you just have to deal with those traditional problems of, you know, I've been in fires where, like, you know, you release the client and something was missed, and you know, you've got a lot of people crashing on startup because of it, right? That hasn't happened at WorkPop, and I don't think it will, but hopefully not. Cross fingers, knock on wood. But it has, it has happened, you know, in my experience, you know, LinkedIn with a lot of people hitting your app. But really, when you think about it, it's a very traditional problem, right? You know what your clients are doing, and in real time, you can modify your servers. You can do hot fixes on the server side to fix those issues. Again, you don't want to be woken up at night to go do that, of course. But when you do, when you have to, it's doable.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, that's similar, right? If you decide to go the route of like Ember and, you know, Ruby or something on the back end of Rails, and you build an API, like you have to have that same level of coordination once you start growing your team between the two development groups almost. And, you know, being at GoDaddy and being part of a 30 developer program there, you know, that was always the challenge for us. And I think maybe for you guys, it's not quite as hard, just being like, I don't know how many guys you have developing.
Let's see, our team, yeah, we've got, let me count.
Let's count these guys.
hey, all you, line up real quick. We're going to count.
Bobbing heads.
4, 5, 6, 7, yes.
And then we just hired a guy today, or he signed his soul to me today, or to us.
Yeah, so.
Not me, but to us.
Looking forward.
And then let me drop in the recruiting spiel here. We're trying to hire 5 more developers, 3 web developers, and
2 Android developers.
2 Android developers, my bad. anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, okay, so, if you guys saw the video, if everyone's watching the video, they could see how dark it is in Chicago and Cincinnati. Look how nice and sunny it is out there with the WorkPop guys.
Oh, yeah, Ben's got this like crazy shadow in his face. Like, I feel like you should have like a.
I know. I'm trying to figure something out here, like that.
There you go. That's something.
There we go. I'm blinded by my iPhone now.
It's my iPhone. Okay, so now, I totally lost my train of thought there.
I got something. Alex, and I think you mentioned this too, Josh, about like JavaScript compiling libraries.
Yeah.
And like, I'm interested with React Native and talking about that a little bit.
I haven't used it, so I'm out. Count me out of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I really can't speak to it because I haven't tried it. But the general concept is very interesting. And Facebook has a lot of people working on this problem. So I can definitely imagine that the experience of building in a hybrid application or hybrid application with React Native is probably many leagues beyond what I've done before. I can definitely imagine that just reading about it. Yeah. But as far as the details, I don't know. I mean, having done native iOS development, basically what React Native is doing is allowing you to build your UI not with like UI view layer of iOS. Like, you're not actually building UI view hierarchies. You're building hierarchies of, you know, something equivalent in their React ecosystem. And that is being translated to, you know, into the actual, you know, Apple core UI view hierarchies, like to build your UI. So that translation, that sounds like the hard part to me, right?
Yeah.
You have a problem. You can have it now that now all of a sudden when you have a problem, you may have a problem, you know, at another dimension, which is the translation, right? You could have a problem in translation as opposed to a problem in your code. So that sounds like it could add complexity, but again, I don't know.
Yeah. Something interesting to look out for on the horizon, but
actually, touch a little bit about React. Now, you know, there's media React packages out there, and I don't know a lot of people using it in production, but I'll probably write a blog post about this. We are going to use a React component in production. So I don't know what it's going to be yet, but Ben and I have already discussed that we want to give it a chance. And where we see that use case in our web application is Blaze is great. Don't get me wrong. Blaze is amazing. It's really good. guys, all you viewers, but when you grow a team and you have a large code base and you start looking at your UI and you need to go change things, you kind of realize that you need to change it in four places to make something work. And that is a big difficulty. And an example is like losing data context in a helper or in a template. You know, those things, there are ways around those problems, right? Comment, like Sasha said, comment your HTML templates, educate your people. But if there is one single source of truth of where this component is built and all the data that it's going to do, all the methods it's going to have, that might make life easier for a developer. Now, whether...
this is interesting because we were just having this kind of debate. Actually, I think it was in the Meteor forums about, you know, how do you dry up your code? I don't know if this is the same thing you're talking about, but let's say, you know, you need to do some kind of calculation on some data coming out of the collection and you want to show it, you know, it's being used in multiple places in your app, and you've got maybe helpers that are handling it, template helpers. Have you guys looked at collection helpers at all and thought about that? Like moving the code further down the stack into the collection, and you know, it uses transform and then decorates the individual model coming out of the collection, essentially.
Well, that is an interesting method of doing that. I actually proposed that to Ben, and he shot me down, and for a good reason. He shot me down for a good reason, and it's because we want to do everything the most conventional way possible. Now, like, and whether that may be, and that actually gets into opinions, right? So it's totally like whatever you think is your thing, but for us,
but I don't think it's necessarily opinion, because actually if you come from the Rails world, I mean, that was definitely a thing, right? So they had this concept of skinny controllers and fat models, and I think that you're saying like skinny helpers, fat models, I don't know, something along those lines.
I guess where his objection was is like, we are moving fast and we need to ramp up our employees who may not come from a Meteor background quickly. Once we're all really adept in Meteor, we will entertain these type of things. But to introduce something new to the code base at this point where we have three employees still fresh, may not be the best thing, because they're on a track of learning something.
But on the flip side, you've now got to have those employees learn React in order to accomplish what you're talking about. And I also think that you've now added an additional layer of complexity for testing, which is interesting, because I think testing collection helpers might actually be easier than maybe testing React components. Now, I haven't tried, but I don't think anyone else has either. So.
Yeah, we're still in the prototyping stage of React.
We're not going to be using it everywhere.
It's not going to be very soon, but that's something we're interested in. But I can see collection helpers being very helpful at some point down the line. Yeah,
and I definitely want them already. But, you know, these are just the things that we're growing with, and, you know, it's not our call, right? So Yeah. We got to keep working with what we got.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's interesting because it seems with Meteor, there's always like two or three ways to skin the proverbial cat, right? Like there's always different ways to approach this problem. Yeah.
Totally. That might apply to programming in general, which is kind of
right? Very true.
Like five ways to say the same thing.
You know, that is a good segue though into our next topic about culture, because WorkPop, you guys have to. You guys are aware that Meteor is a new framework. You guys are bringing on people that aren't necessarily aware of Meteor. And like what you just said, it kind of affects how we develop in Meteor. And at the same time, you guys have a runway. You guys are a startup. You guys, speed is important. Bringing up your team is important. Scaling the team as quick is really important.
Yeah, totally. Can you
talk on that, Avi, a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, what Meteor does for a team is really amazing. I come from a background where the back-end developers used to sit in this room and the front-end developers used to sit in this room. And if you needed to, you know, if you needed to talk about the API and like, how come like I don't have this this part of the data, you'd get out of your seat, walk to the other room, and then the guys would be like, hey, we're kind of busy right now. Make a meeting and we'll talk about this, right? And that's my background, right? So it's like, that doesn't work. I used to be a front-end developer. That doesn't work because everyone is trying to move forward. You cannot be waiting on other people to move forward. The beautiful thing about Meteor is you have access to the full stack. You have access to everything. Whether you're good at both or not, like you have access to see what is going on underneath the hood. And you can make decisions whether they're good or bad, but you can still have the ability to make decisions and move forward. At our company, our culture is really open. Everyone gets to touch everything. Alex and Seth, in their last feature, they built the backend for it. It's JavaScript. They got to do it. It's not like only Ben and I could do it. We actually told them to do it. Alex is specking up experimentation features for like our different features and toggling them on and off. Like we're not just in our own cubicles. We are making strides in everything. And anyone who comes and joins us, they are we preach in our technical interviews and our conversations that we are using Meteor and we're really excited about it. So the people we hire, they need to have openness to other technology, whether they like Meteor or not. They need to be open to a new tech culture that Meteor brings in. And I'm glad to say we have guys from Microsoft and Google sitting outside. They were scared of Meteor at first, but now they're coming around to it because they can see how well we work together as a team, how less we argue about things. Like all these things actually play when everyone gets to do everything.
I would agree with that. And you know, I give a talk on why Meteor, and one of my points is, you know, it's just JavaScript. And that's the amazing thing, because to me, JavaScript is that gateway drug, right? And so like you learn JavaScript or Ben learned JavaScript because he was probably doing some kind of like maybe backend code and was interested in maybe doing something a little more interactive on the front end. And so you start to dabble in JavaScript, like, oh, I need to do this jQuery thing, right? And then you've got the designer on the other side who's like, oh, hey, I'm building all my cool HTML and CSS. Yes. Oh, wait, I need to do something, you know, click this button and all this stuff happens on the page with jQuery. And, you know, they start to learn JavaScript. And then all of a sudden, the interesting thing that happens is once everybody knows JavaScript and the entire framework's in JavaScript, if they can read API docs, they can do everything they need to do. Like,
yeah. And then like easy. Objective C goes away.
Not yet. No, I agree. Yeah, I can speak a little bit to like Meteor onboarding, having gone through it in the last few months. Nice. Like, yeah, I'm definitely, you know, a student of Meteor still, and will be for a long time. Don't consider myself an expert at all. I've written, you know, built features and built APIs, and I think that, yeah, one, JavaScript, it's key, right? Like, I think that's really one of the glue languages that brings developers together is the web. Like, everybody at some point has probably written some sort of web anything, which is going to be touching JavaScript. So coming from, I've done a lot of backbone JS development. So coming from that, jumping into Meteor, different mindset, But look, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of really awesome ways to learn online. I mean, we've got, you know, Discover Meteor. We've got a bunch, you know, I don't know them off the top of my head. But like, you know, I've sat and read through that, got, you know, really help wrapping my head around some of the more complicated aspects of way things are different, right? Than like a more restful, like front end, back end type of thing. But I would say, you know, the barrier to get going, the bar, I guess, is not that high to jump over to get going, right?
Yeah, and there's plenty of, so I might trip over my words here, but there are professional media developers out there, such as Josh, Ben, you are too, but we're all solving similar problems, right? Josh wrote a post about geospatial indexes. Well, it turns out we also did that like 2 weeks ago. What did we do first? We said, hey, you should probably look at Josh Owen's blog post just to see what's up, you know, see like what you're thinking, you know? Boom, did that. Then he's like, all right, I'm going to do something different. That's okay. But at least you can lean on other professional developers in the space, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really cool because, you know, in other languages, there's a bunch of help out there. You can go to Stack Overflow. You can get all the stuff. We're at the point in the media community that we're starting to get there. But there are people like Chris Mather. There's Josh. There's Arunoda. There's these, like, heads of the community that are pumping out content that really helped, you know, to onboard these guys, it really helps. For Alex, I sent him Discover Meteor, I sent him Evented Mind, and let's go, you know, boom, just start going. Whether that makes you an expert, I can't say it does, but it gets you in the right track to be there. And mm-hmm. I think as we get more professional developers, like guys from Google or Microsoft, LinkedIn, to actually come from another stack, to a environment where it's just Meteor, it actually breaks the conventions they're used to, then transforms them into a Meteor developer, we're gonna get more content. Yep. More people who have similar, they've solved problems, similar situations in other languages, have now gonna bring those solutions to Meteor. And then boom, we're gonna have so many packages and like things are gonna be chill and easy. Like, I'm so excited about that. But it starts with building like a tech culture that's okay with uncertainty. Like, you don't know where the framework's gonna go. You gotta be okay with that. And looking for development that may not exist in the media community now with the hopes that you're gonna train them to be like some Ninja Turtle like boss, you know, like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a really good point with product uncertainty, because I think I didn't stress that enough in my last position that I was at. And that caused a lot of like bumps in the road. Just like saying, hey, this is a new technology. This is really where things are rolling. And in the future is like looking super bright going in this direction. And I think if I was more clear on that, things might've gone a little bit more successful. The app was super successful, but like the back end corporate adoption of it, that was a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah. Thankfully for us here, our CEOs are patient. One, they're patient. And two, they realize that, you know, they realize that Meteor is a new technology, but also our investor, Dan, has invested in new technologies. He's an investor in Docker, Compose. These are all new technologies that he as an investor was like, I don't know. And we're part of that portfolio of companies that he has. So it's nice that the CEO's advisor is also someone who likes to take technical bets. And actually, that is why our culture is so good in the tech area, because it goes straight from the guy who's given us money all the way down to our guy, Wilson, who's our customer success guy, who understands like, this probably is not going to be hard in Meteor, but Abhi, what do you think about this feature? Like, even Wilson's thinking about,
nice.
You're like, things
are wild.
You know, that's beautiful in my mind. That's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting point too, because I guess the counterpoint to that is I talked to some potential clients today, and I won't name them here, but I mean, they were struggling with an advisor told them, well, Meteor, you know, it doesn't scale. It's for prototyping. You know, it's all the typical FUD stuff that you hear, right? Like, all of us are, we've blown past that. As soon as you use Meteor and start building something for real, you realize like this stuff really isn't a huge problem. But you know,
who is saying that Meteor doesn't scale? Like, I want to find that one Twitter guy.
Everybody. I mean, for the longest time, everyone said Rails can't scale. And, you know, we've got the Twitter fail whale to thank for those concepts, right? And I think that until you have a Twitter that doesn't crap itself, then, I mean, it's you're still going to deal with these perceptions, right? And that's what these really are. Like, there are plenty of people that are handling like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 concurrent connections, and all they have to do to scale is just pop in a few new servers, and it's not that big of a deal for them. And, you know, so the conversation became, well, our investors and our advisors are telling us this thing, and we're worried about that. And so even though we've built an application in Meteor with Cordova, and we've put something into the App Store, we're kind of thinking about pulling back, switching to Ruby, because we hear it's more scalable, and, you know, we'll build a native iOS app. And so, you know, my job then became like, you know, you're going to have a lot of wasted time. You know, it's probably, you're going to ballpark it at probably a month or 2 months. It's probably going to be more like 3 to 4 months before you get something built and out the door. And you know, I mean, there's a lot of interesting concepts in there, but I think that they were doing it for the wrong reason. And the reason is because their investors and advisors were telling them one thing. And so, I mean, I definitely can agree that's a valuable thing to
have. Were the leaders technical at all, or?
No, they weren't.
Yeah, that seems to be the problem.
I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, it's not an easy question to just, you know, it's not an easy problem to like, just say, you know, this is right for me, that's right for us, you know, like it just definitely deserves a good amount of thought on what technology you use to build something. But, you know, it, and I can understand some reservations, you know, about new technologies in general. But I mean, here at WorkPop, we've been just more than happy, and we've got, you know, a lot of concurrent connections all the time, and it's working great.
Yeah.
Not just it doesn't cost money to scale, which is what people like. I honestly feel people are kind of cheap, where they're like, I want to scale, but I don't want to spend this much money. So let me pick a framework that's going to help me scale for the lowest. It doesn't work like that, dude. Like, let me tell you, viewers, it doesn't work like that. You got to spend money to make money. That's all I got to say.
Well, yeah, I absolutely agree. Like I mentioned earlier, working for the company outright, and you know, they were bought by GoDaddy, and you know, as part of their acquisition, one of the things that they had to work on was one, acquiring more users, and two, dropping the hosting cost per user, right? And that's something that I think a company far beyond where this company is, or maybe even where you guys are, like you guys probably aren't looking very hard at hosting cost per user, because it doesn't matter. You're not like looking at the profitability of the application at this point. You're just trying to like get a bunch of people interested in the application. So
yeah, totally. And I see, honestly, like this brings me to like a lot of when new people join Meteor community, the first things they ask is like, Meteor can't scale. What am I supposed to do with Meteor? And I ask them like, what app are you building? He's like, I'm just going to build a to-do app. I'm like, hey, okay, so you're asking about scaling questions right now when you haven't built anything. Like you should embrace the community first, learn everything about Meteor before you start worrying about things that are probably above your pay grade, right? And,
it's totally above your pay grade.
You're building a to-do app. It's like, it's not your worry to scale stuff right now, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, also when people, and this is away from scaling, when people want to, you know, they're building a to-do app, and then they ask like, well, how am I going to create some crazy method that's going to do some crazy thing? Like, you're building a to-do app. Mm-hmm. Why do you need that? You know, it's because, you know, they probably came from a different background where, you know, like that's what you could do. And they think about those things. And honestly, like I hate framework bashing. I'm not a framework basher. I don't want the Meteor community to be framework bashers. There are going to be people from different mindsets. They are going to talk shit about Meteor, but you know, the best way to deal with these people is to approach them at their level and be like, "Yo, you're building a to-do app." You know, I understand that this worked in Rails like this, but it doesn't work like this here. When we hit that problem, let's face it then. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just my opinion on that.
Yeah. Now, I don't want people to get scared off, but it was interesting, and I want to get your guys' opinion. So, like a year ago, WorkPop started with Meteor, and And it was a challenge. It was a gamble. It was like, you know, can it really scale? And it was like a legit question back then. Can this really happen? And now we're a whole year later, we're so much more advanced. The scaling issue is not really an issue at all. There's multiple ways to scale it. But it still stands. To consider Meteor for a larger project, do you need, we lost Josh.
Oh, no.
Dude, no captain. What are we going to do?
Uh-oh. Well, for the viewer's sake, are we going to edit this stuff? Maybe we can edit what I'm saying right now, but maybe we should wait for him, and then we can edit.
We're going to edit. Yeah. Dude, isn't Josh's, like, forehead super shiny? Yeah. You need to put, like, a ball cap on or something.
Don't edit this part out. Josh, your head is super shiny. Put in the outtakes or something. This is going pretty well so far, and a lot of good things are being said.
So. Yeah, we're coming up to 1 hour right now, so I mean it's pretty good. Let me just talk to Josh really quick on Slack.
Sure, and we can wrap up soon if you guys need to. I know we probably need to wrap up pretty soon.
Oh, is he coming back?
Hey,
you're back.
Back, yay!
So we finished up. We closed out.
No, you're still recording. I see it. Yeah, nice done. Try.
All right.
Where were we?
So let me start that question over again.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about how innovative Meteor is, and I just didn't want the viewers to get scared away. Do you need like an innovative technical lead or CEO? To recommend Meteor? Are you like putting yourself at a risk at this stage right now, recommending Meteor to people who aren't necessarily technical? I mean, the scaling issue is a non-issue really right now, but those non-technical people, that might be one of the first things that they get from their old school advisors and stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to let Alex take this one.
So if you're trying to, I guess, explain you're trying to explain why Meteor is a good choice to someone who's non-technical. Is that your question?
Like, do you think a developer should play it safe? Like, is Meteor still too much of a risk in the eyes of like an executive?
Oh, I don't see it that way at all. I think, building software from a high level, right? Building software is something where processes are changing. You know, technologies are changing. Like, if you're doing anything right, you're going to have to rebuild some stuff that you built a few years ago. You're going to have to change some stuff. I think getting off the ground with Meteor, I don't foresee any, like, things right that you're going to have to rebuild, like, not in Meteor. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that why not embrace something that has made, you know, lots of people very productive and built some really gorgeous apps out there really quickly and really scale it to a lot of people. Why not? I don't think there's, I think it's a natural thing. I think you're doing something right. If you get to a point where you have to step back and say, hey, you know, we're pushing the limits. What are we going to do? Right. But there's a lot of time, you know, there's a lot of time between building something out and getting there. And there's always time to evaluate, look back, figure what you're doing right. And I think Meteor as a community is very open to suggestions, to communication, like to learning. So I don't really see any reason not to recommend it.
Right. And so my response to that would be, you know, I say that the risk is not really there. I mean, I guess like there's some risk on your head for suggesting it, right? And if it fails, like that's on you. But I think Meteor as a framework, like when you look at, they've got some big goals, right? Like their big audacious hairy goal is like so Rails is the stack that you go to for Ruby. They want Meteor to be the stack that you go to for Node. And I think that they can actually go further than that. And if you look at like, I've seen this awesome graph and I should recreate this and put it on a blog post or something, but you know, Matt drew this graph, and if you're watching the video, like I'm using my hands here to illustrate, but he's got like these four points, you know, that are drawn out, and you know, one of them's the database, then the next one is your pub sub, and then the next one is like your client. Maybe there's only three. I guess mini Mongo, and then you've got like your templates, right? And the interesting thing is like you can actually draw little dotted lines in there between each spot, and you can actually break off and change out a piece anywhere in there, and the entire stack would still function to some degree, right? And so everyone's like, oh, you know, when's Meteor going to switch away from Mongo? That's only one of the four pieces that you can kind of change out and work with at that point. And then, you know, there are people doing interesting things with Meteor that are completely outside of Node or even outside of JavaScript, right? So if you look at Kedira, I was just talking to Aaron Noda about this today. You know, when your stats go from your application into Kedira, they're going into just a plain vanilla Node app. And then they're going into a Kafka queue server. And then, you know, he's got this queue runner that's running Go, and the Go's actually serving up DDP. And it's the data source for part of the application. And so, you know, now, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like it's easy to change out the pieces, you know, the pieces in the game here to ones that make more sense. And we're still able to leave a Meteor app mostly in place.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing.
Pretty powerful.
Yeah. And back to that, as Meteor can connect to more traditional things, the people that traditional thinking or Python, Java, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's also a bunch of DDP clients, right, on Meteorpedia or whatever. As more professional developers start contributing to those repos or start using these bridges, start building things that actually take things out of the Meteor scope but still function with it, that's how our community is going to grow. You know, then people are not going to be scared about anything. They're going to be like, I can connect to whatever I want, you know.
Yeah, each of the pieces is going to become more robust as a result.
Yeah.
Right. Same with us building this native iOS app, right? Like we're, you know, embracing some DDP clients, like, you know, that we're contributing back to them and we are changing things, you know, all this stuff's going to be positive in the end.
Yeah. Right? And once we have some time, we're definitely going to, you know, tell people how we did our native stuff, and Alex will be taking charge on that.
But yeah. We'll be,
no pressure.
Yeah, but once we release our next update and have some more time, I'll be spending some of my time writing up, you know, overview of how we did what we did.
Nice.
We'll hold you to that now. You said it on a podcast. It must come true.
It's coming.
Yeah, we need a date.
That's why I keep saying it, that I have to do it, right?
Very cool. Right. So really quick with the culture and wrapping that thing up, now that everyone's in one room and everyone's sharing one code base, one programming language, for the most part. like, how does that work now? How does communication go? Like, how important? Because now you guys are kind of like moving faster.
Everyone's coordination, right?
Coordination. That's
coordination,
great.
And yeah. Coordination hasn't changed from your traditional like software development. Like, there's still upstream processes that are speccing and ideating and you know, using like this should do this and this should do that and thinking about all that stuff. Those things are same. Some people are just really bad at them, so like, you know, maybe that's not good for some teams. Our team, we're actually in the process of getting good at it. We actually, you know, maybe like 2 quarters ago we weren't good at it, and a lot of our developers, our coordination was off. Someone didn't know what they're working on, or this one time two of us were working on the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, shit, right? But I think that's a problem for any team, you know, these upstream things where, like, you know, like, just coordination and stuff. But when it actually gets time to development, things are actually split up into feature teams. Since we have candidate pod and a employer pod, we have 2 sections of our business. We've actually split our developers into 2 sections. Though some features are interdependent, we still distinctly put ourselves into 2 different pods. And it's actually, the coordination is actually not even bad. Like someone who's not good at CSS doesn't mean they don't build the feature or the front end of the feature. you know, most of us are really good at HTML, so no one's writing like terrible HTML. But you know, they'll write the back end, they'll write the methods, all that stuff they need. They'll stub out all the HTML. It looks like crap, whatever. Then they'll, you know, we all rely on each other to succeed, right? I think I'm really good at CSS here. So Jason, he's done with his feature. He's going to come over like, hey, man, he doesn't ask me to do the CSS for him. He says like, hey, could we pair program the CSS so I can eventually get good at CSS? And that's our culture here. I'm not going to do your work for you. I'm going to help you out because I am better than this at you, even though you're probably better at me than a bunch of shit.
Yeah. You know? On top of that, just having, you know, GitHub pull requests and code reviews and talking about, you know, diffs and literally line by line, oh, this could be a little bit better if you do this, do that. Yeah. I could see this working a different way. I mean, that's just, you know, change the game, not necessarily Meteor specific or anything, but we've got, you know, a big code base now and a lot, you know, more and more people working on it. And code reviews are really key.
And everyone can read the diff. That's beautiful. Everyone. Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
that's interesting. So do you guys have like a style guide or a JS lint or JS hint file?
This is the Q&A question. And Abby was like, yeah, Josh, that's a great idea.
Oh yeah. I forgot I asked you guys that. Yeah.
We do have a style guide that's written down on like our way of writing JavaScript.
Nice.
Whether that's right, I don't know, but that's our way of doing things, and that's written down now. Whether we enforce it, that's another question.
No JS hint yet,
but at least we, you know, took the time and we wrote it down. That's because some of the guys who came from, you know, Google, Microsoft, LinkedIn, whatever, they are used to that. They were used to it. Like, we have style guides back at our old company. We don't have anything here, so they kept asking, like, we need a style guide. Ben was like, man, I'm sick of all this complaining, and I said on the podcast that I was going to do it. So he wrote it up. He's just like, I'm going to write it up. And he did. So
nice.
Now the next part for us is to enforce it. And we actually do enforce it in the code reviews, but it's not like second nature to everyone to do it. But, you know, that's the next step as we progress. We'll totally
get it. Yeah. So the interesting thing is, like, you can hook it into, if you do write the JS hint file, you can either hook it into your build process and run JS hint like before you run your tests or something, or there's another product called Hound app, I think. And
yeah,
you can, I'm pretty sure you can give it a JS hint file and it'll run over your code and it'll actually put comments right in your GitHub pull request and be like, hey, you left some white space in there, dork.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's definitely where we're moving towards. And, you know, things like that make you so much more efficient, because in the code review, if you have to type in a comment like this is not formatted correctly, you're like wasting like 2 seconds, but that adds up on like every, you know, format error. And that's just like really, really is a waste of time.
It's maddening. Yeah. HoundCI.com.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, totally easy. And then, yeah, everyone should adopt a style guide. Even if you're working on a project with like 3 people, adopt a style guide. This is good practice for when you do go to a team of more than like maybe like 5 people, or like you have 10 people in a team. You have the experience of like, hey, I actually wrote a style guide in my last project. You know, you could even write a style guide if you're in like a team of one. Just write one. It's good
experience. Don't even write one, right? Just steal. Meteor has a style guide, and they have people have translated that into a JS hint file. And like, you can totally be lazy and steal that if you want.
Yeah, totally. I think we stole a lot of our style guide, like the basic JavaScript stuff, from Airbnb, because we respect a lot of the people there. So we took a lot of their like styles just for basic JavaScript, you know, and we, you know, we credit them in our style guide, but that's totally okay. It's not like you have to be some genius to think of a new paradigm. Like, just take it. Who cares, man?
Yeah.
It's just going to be like one long like beep once your lawyer gets a hold of this for editing.
Nice. All right. I think that kind of wraps us up though. So first I want to say thanks, Ben, for the gift. And thanks, Abby and Alex, for coming on this week. It's been awesome.
Good time, man.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having
us. Yeah. All right.
I have one more message. To the viewers, sorry to take your thunder. Really, if anyone can spare the money, I would please donate to Patreon. I don't know if you're using Patreon anymore, but if you are going to donate to Meteor Club, you should, because I don't know what channel, but whatever channel it is, donate to Josh and Meteor Club. This is what brings the community forward. And then he can do a lot more things with his, you know, podcast channels, all that stuff. I'm a patron, and here at Work Pop, we're all going to be converting to patrons because we believe in Meteor and we believe in the people like heading these different Meteor efforts. So, yeah, do that. Donate. Do what you can. Just do what you can. That's all good.
Do it.
Yeah.
$90, $5, $500, $1,000. Do it.
Well, so, I mean, the interesting thing is we've got the Slack chat room and it's 10 bucks a month to get in there. And I have seen some amazing things happen in there. And, you know, like the three of us are in there and Alex is not. And so like he maybe can't attest to this, but I mean, it's awesome to see the kinds of things that just happen. You know, like we saw a guy who came in last week, hadn't built a Meteor app. And this week, like he's launching a Meteor app and he's like compiling PDFs and, you know, he just lost his job too. And so we're like, oh, hey, like, let's give you some job leads in Meteor land. Like clearly you've got some chops here. Like let's do something about this, you know? And it's just been really awesome.
Yeah. It's a killer community. So like Josh, like we're talking about this community, this whole podcast is born out of it. We talk about it. We get all our topics from the group.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge piece of my entertainment every day. How does someone get in on this? I've mentioned Patreon. What is Patreon? Like, what is
it? Oh, God. Yeah. So it's patreon.com/Meteor Club. And I don't know. Like, I'm having trouble with them. Like, they can't seem to get me the money that they have. They have a giant pile of cash here of mine that they won't send to me. But so I've been working with another guy in the club and we've been trying to get MeteorJS.club up to speed so you can just put your credit card in there and it'll just automatically add you to the Slack chat room once you do that. And so the hope is like, we'll have that done in the next couple of weeks. But for now, yeah, if you want to get in, like Patreon is definitely the way to do it. And like I said, it's just 10 bucks a month. It doesn't charge you till the first of the month. So I mean, if you want to game the system, sign up today, you know, on the 8th, and you'll get how many ever days free. So,
and it's completely worth $10. Like, I'm shocked, like, how much information there is available just in that one group. And how many Meteor authors do we have in there right now?
Well, there's Sasha, there's Stefan Hohaus, say his name right, Sasha Graf. Got to get all these names right. I know Manuel Schobel, I think it's Schobel is in there.
Sam stops by.
Yeah, Sam's in there. So he's writing the testing book. I don't know. We don't have any of the pack publishing guys. I'm a little hurt by that. I don't know what's going on, you know. If you don't know them, then, you know, that's probably better for you anyway. they seem like spammers. But, you know, there's a lot of amazing people in there. A lot of people, like even people that I turn to and ask questions sometimes, like I don't have all the answers. And, you know, I didn't meet like this literally did come around because of you and I talking, Ben, you know, and like, I didn't know you before I started the Slack chat room and you came in there and we started talking more and more. And like, you know, I gave you all the connections for interviewing with people and you ended up landing a job somewhere else. So, you know, I mean,
beautiful relationship was born.
Great things can happen, guys. Yeah. In the Meteor Club Slack chat room.
This podcast has been a Meteor Club production. You can find out more information about Meteor Club at meteorjs.club. It's pretty easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. Again, that's meteorjs.club.